February 26th, home from QuiltCon, still recovering. Also, I have a cold. Of course I have a cold. February 27th. I started yesterday's entry thinking I would write for hours and hours, recording everything I saw and did in Raleigh. In part because of my cold, I knew I wasn't up to the task. But also, after scribbling down two sentences, I realized I still needed time to get my brain back on track. I had a literature professor in college who loved Eudora Welty's story, The Wide Net. And whenever we started a new novel for his course, he'd begin his lecture by saying, "This one will take the wide net." Well, writing about QuiltCon will take the wide net for sure. It's a 7.5-hour drive from Milton Falls, Ohio, to Raleigh, North Carolina, a drive that once upon a time we would have made in a day, no questions asked. But honestly, now that Daryl and I are retired, what's the rush? Sheila, it turned out, was also okay with taking 2 days to travel to Raleigh, though she reserved the right to fly home if she started feeling antsy about being away from the shop for so long. "But I think it'll be fine," she said more than once as we set out on the road Wednesday morning, headed for Bluefield, West Virginia, where we would be spending the night. "Emily won't have any problems. She's practically running the shop by herself these days. I'm so busy teaching classes and shipping orders." "And Carol's there," I'd remind her each time she brought up leaving Emily in charge, a reminder that always caused Sheila to breathe an audible sigh of relief. "Yes, and Carol's there," she'd repeat like a mantra. "Carol's there." It was a 4-hour drive to Bluefield, a little dot of a town in the Appalachian Mountains, which I'm sure is very pretty in the summer, but like a lot of places, is a little bleak at the tail end of winter. Still, everyone we met was nice, even if we heard a whole lot of comments on our accents. "Y'all just talk so flat," our waitress at Dolly's Diner told us, "and kinda nasally." "I didn't even know I had an accent," Sheila said in the car the next morning as we headed out of town. Daryl and I nodded in agreement. We'd always assumed we were accent-free, too. We arrived in Raleigh a little before noon, which meant we had time to kill before we could get into our Airbnb. So off to the quilt show we went. And diary, what a quilt show it was. Now, anyone who knows me knows that I have yet to drink the modern quilting Kool-Aid. Of course, now that I find myself married to a modern quilter, I'm more familiar with the style, or should I say styles. Up until my time at QuiltCon, I thought there were 2, maybe 3 styles of modern quilts at most. There was the wonky improvisational style that Kate leans toward, and then there's Daryl's style, which is pretty much what you would expect from an engineer. He loves angles and precision and playing around with geometry. Something about Daryl's quilts seems to almost be verging on a traditional pattern and then skittering away at the last moment. One thing I learned from the first day, Daryl was far from the only male quilter who had quilts hanging at the show. Moreover, a lot of the quilts by men had that same emphasis on precision and technique. Oh, I know, I shouldn't generalize, and of course I didn't see every quilt in the show. All of the quilts in the show I did see were sharply designed and well constructed. I think I was expecting more, I don't know, sloppiness? Not so much attention to detail? "Modern quilting has grown up, Mom," Kate said at dinner Thursday night, which was takeout tacos that we ate at our very cute Airbnb. "Think about it. The first QuiltCon was 11 years ago, back when modern quilting was still young and modern quilters were still learning how to sew. At least a lot of them were. There have always been expert quilters in the modern quilt world. Just look at Victoria Finley Wolf. Daryl nodded enthusiastically. She got best in show at the first QuiltCon for an amazing quilt. I really admire her work. And from the very beginning, Jackie Gehring was an excellent technician. Sean Kimber, too. We had a presentation at our guild about the history of QuiltCon a few months ago, Kate said, where we looked at the winning quilts for every year there's been a QuiltCon. You can see how much more sophisticated a lot of the quilts have gotten. People have learned to do curves. And Y-seams and applique, Daryl added. The skill level is just phenomenal. Kate's face fell a little. The only problem is, people like me are never going to get their quilts in QuiltCon. I mean, I love making quilts, but I don't think I'm ever going to make quilts as good as the ones in this year's show. I can learn the skills, but then you've got to come up with an original design. I just don't have the talent for that. I wasn't sure what to say. I wanted to encourage my daughter, to tell her she could do whatever she wanted if she worked hard enough. But the fact is, while she's always been creative and loved making things, Katie's not the caliber of artist we saw in the show. Does that sound terrible? Don't get me wrong. She is a smart, talented young woman. She's had so many promotions at her hospital administration job that Daryl jokes she's going to be Surgeon General before she's 40. And her quilts are wonderful. But would they have fit in to this show? No, because Katie makes quilts to wrap up in. She makes quilts for babies and quilts for beds. The quilts that we saw at QuiltCon were quilts for walls, and I liked a lot more of them than I thought I would. I loved the quilt that won Best in Show, an applique quilt made by a teacher who had asked her fellow teachers how they would protect themselves if a gunman entered their classroom. What weapons did they have at their disposal? As a retired teacher, that quilt hit me hard. On our way home, Sheila, Daryl, and I had a long discussion about all of the political messaging at QuiltCon. Sheila didn't love it. "I want quilting to be my happy place," she said. "I appreciated that quilt that won Best in Show. It was brilliantly designed and well constructed, but I don't want to think about school shootings while I'm looking at quilts. I'm sorry, but I just don't."
"I think QuiltCon is more of an art show than a quilt show," Daryl said. "You'd feel differently if you saw that quilt in an art gallery, I bet." Sheila nodded.
"Of course I would. I don't know. Maybe it's wrong to compartmentalize things, but I can't help it. Quilting has always been my refuge, and I know that I'm lucky. I can duck my head into the sand from time to time, and not everyone can. But is it so wrong to want to have one part of my life sweet and uncomplicated?"
"I don't think it's wrong," I said, "and sometimes I get tired of it too. At the same time, it was kind of bracing, I guess, to walk into a show and see a quilt about gun violence first thing. It was so powerful. Maybe I just feel that way because I was a teacher for so many years, and school was my happy place. Until Columbine and Sandy Creek. I had such terrible nightmares after Sandy Creek. I mean, for the rest of my career, and sometimes I still have them. So that quilt." And then I stopped because I was too choked up to keep talking. It's funny thinking about it now. There's part of me that wishes a big, beautiful G's Ben type quilt had won QuiltCon. Something cheerful and funky. The exact sort of quilt that I assumed would have greeted me when I entered the floor. I'm like Sheila. I want quilting to be my happy place, and I get tired of everything getting politicized. But I know enough quilt history to know that this isn't the first time quilters have made statements with their quilts. Like I've always said, the modern quilters think they're onto something new, but all kinds of quilters, quilters from the 19th century to the 1970s and beyond, have used their quilts to express their politics. You just don't see those quilts at the Peacemakers Show and Tell. which I'm okay with, believe me. But when I saw that quilt at QuiltCon, what we will use as weapons, a list of school supplies, I thought, it's about time someone said what every teacher I've ever known has been thinking for the last 25 years. And then I started to cry. Okay, more on QuiltCon later. I think that's enough for now. March 3rd. I thought I'd have lots more to say about QuiltCon, but I find it's kind of floating away from me. Maybe it's this stupid cold. There were so many quilts and so many people there, it was overwhelming. Speaking of being overwhelmed, I saw Marianne Fonz walking through the quilt show. It was like seeing royalty. I thought about going up to her and telling her how important Fonz and Porter was to me back in the day, how I taped it every week on the VCR to watch on Sunday afternoons after church. But I knew I'd just blabber incoherently and embarrass us both. Sheila had a great time talking shop with the quilt shop owners who had booths in the vending area. She practically spent the whole ride back to Bluefield talking about the young woman who owns a shop outside of Atlanta called String and Story.
Holly Ann gave me so many ideas for how to promote Thimble Pleasures online, she reported. She's like Jenny Doan Jr., Mini Jenny. I might go down and visit her store one of these days.
I kept thinking about a road trip to Atlanta, and that night I asked her, if you're heading south, then you know what we should do? We were eating at a barbecue place where I think I may have possibly had 3 servings of hush puppies, but who can say for sure? Sheila knew exactly what we should do.
We should go to the Quiltville Inn. I was thinking the exact same thing.
You'd be taking the long way to Atlanta if you stopped in Virginia, Daryl told her. The best way to Atlanta from Milton Falls is through Kentucky and Tennessee. We don't want to know the best way, I said, popping yet another hush puppy in my mouth, wondering if it was possible to make hush puppies at home and knowing that it probably wasn't. They were just too good.
We want to go the way that takes us past the Quiltville Inn so we can meet Bonnie Hunter, Sheila explained. Whatever way that is, that's the best way. The way to Bonnie Hunter is always the best way.
Daryl chewed on a fry. It's like you guys have your own version of Hollywood, only instead of George Clooney and Julia Roberts, it's Bonnie Hunter and Marianne Fonz.
And Jenny Doan and Pat Sloan and Alex Anderson and Ricky Timms, Sheila said. What do you think Ricky Timms is like in real life? He seems so soulful on the quilt show. I'd like him to play piano at my funeral.
I thought you wanted your brother to play piano at your funeral, I said, dumping some more coleslaw onto my pulled pork platter. Sheila considered this as she dipped her fork into a bowl of seriously boiled collard greens.
Sure, if Ricky Timms isn't available.
Do you think just 2 people can stay at the Quiltville Inn? I asked. Or do you need a group?
Probably a group, Sheila said. But that wouldn't be too hard. I can think of at least 10 people from the Guild who would love to spend a weekend or a week up there.
I'd go, Daryl offered, and Sheila and I stared at him. You'd go where? I asked after a moment's silence. To the Quiltville Inn? Daryl nodded. Sure, it's a retreat center, right? I think it would be nice to quilt for a few days without the demands of modern urban life weighing on me. What part of suburban Milton Falls do you consider urban? I asked. Well, we're not suburban, Daryl said, and we're not out in the exurbs, so where are we?
There should be a name for the part of town you live in, Sheila said, because you're right. It's not really suburban the way, say, Timberline Oaks is suburban, but it's not really the city either.
This wasn't a topic that Sheila had any real interest in. She was just trying to distract Daryl. Sheila and I both support Daryl's quilting. We think it's great. But that doesn't mean we're going to take him on quilting retreats with us. There are some lines we just won't cross. The ride home from Raleigh was much more subdued than the ride there. For one thing, we were all exhausted, even on the second day after we'd gotten a good night's sleep in Bluefield, which hadn't changed a bit since last we'd seen it 4 days before. For another thing, Sheila was texting every 5 minutes with Carol about the store. Everything was fine. Sheila just wanted to hit the ground running when she got back on Monday. I finally thought to ask her why she wasn't texting with Emily. Sheila looked at me like the thought had never occurred to her. "She's been at Thimble Pleasures a lot longer than Carol has," I pointed out. "And you did leave her in charge." A funny expression flitted across Sheila's face, but she just shrugged and didn't say anything. "You left Carol in charge, didn't you?" I asked. "You told Emily that she was in charge, but really, Carol was running the show the whole time." Sheila looked out the window.
"Did I just see a butterfly? That would be strange, wouldn't it? It's still February, for one thing, and for another thing, we're still in the mountains."
"Fine, you don't have to tell me," I said, digging out some English paper-pieced hexies from my sewing bag. "And I won't tell Emily that she was only make-believe in charge."
"Did I ever once say that Emily wasn't in charge?" Sheila finally asked.
"No, I think you left her in charge on Tuesday, but panicked on Wednesday and asked Carol to take over." I was feeling a little like Sherlock Holmes by this point. "Only you told her not to let Emily know, because if Emily found out..."
"She'd think I don't trust her,"
Sheila finished for me.
"But I do trust her. I trust her as long as I'm still inside of the city limits."
Daryl broke in. "How's Tom? Does he play much golf this time of year?" he asked, as though the conversation had lagged and he thought he'd get it going again. "Is this discussion making you anxious?" I asked. "A little? Maybe we could listen to some music." Sheila and I looked at each other and raised our eyebrows. "Men, they were so tough until you brought some real human emotion into a conversation. Then it was all, 'Let's see what's on the radio.'" I picked up my phone and texted Sheila. "Have you heard from Tom? You would have told me, right?" She replied with a thumbs up emoji. "Does that mean yes, you haven't heard from him?" I texted back. Another thumbs up, followed by a string of Z's to indicate snoring. "Good idea," I thought, and turned to Daryl. "Are you okay if I nap for a little bit?" He nodded and gave me a real thumbs up sign, made with a real thumb. I slept all the way back home. Thank you so much for listening to Diary of a Mad Quilter and for being a Story Guild subscriber. Keep tuning in for more quilt fiction and more quilty fun.